Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Beauty and the Brain, the podcast where we discuss all things aesthetics. I'm your co-host, Dr. Chris Crowley.
Host best.
And I'm Jerry Drinkard, family nurse practitioner. Together, Chris and I own Skin and Tonic Med Spa that's located here in Pace, Florida. And today, I think we're talking about something that we talk about a lot. Like, we're talking about how to spot high-quality work and, I guess, and how to spot bad work, right? So we're joined today by Allie, and she's here with Chris Knott to chat it up about it.
Allie, we're going to let you lead the conversation.
Okay. How do you think you know that somebody has had high quality aesthetic work?
I think you shouldn't know they had any work at all. Okay. To me, that means high quality.
Yeah.
I can usually identify when someone has had work by the quality of their skin. Mm. If I see a 60-year-old that has like glowy skin that's snug, even if they have like some lines, some wrinkles, then usually you know that they've had
that. Didn't just happen.
It doesn't just happen, because like at 60 you're battling like the years of sun. Even if you protect yourself, you're battling hormones at that point that are, I think, just detrimental to our skin. You know, that's like my favorite patient, like, is that like that age range when they start, because you can make such a difference like pretty quickly. And so that's kind of my indicator. And then I start looking.
I think it is a little bit easier for us maybe to spot like possible aesthetic work versus somebody who is not in the industry. Like before I worked here, I would see people. I'm just so oblivious to everything. I was talking to one of my patients about this the other day about how I found this like old college picture of me and Channing. And oh my God, I saved it for him because I didn't want to throw it away. And I was like, you want to see a picture, an old picture of me with no lips? And he was like, no. And I'm like, but at that point, and even like a few years before I came here, I was so oblivious to thinking like, oh, that's only for like Hollywood people. Like people aren't actually like doing that to themselves. And then like the older I got and the closer I got to people who like were in the industry, I was like, oh, that's something totally normal that normal people do. And so I think now looking back, like I probably could have pointed out a few more people with work, but I would just assume it was natural if it looked good.
Yeah.
But I think now I'm more skeptical. Like I'm like, there's no way your lips are that good naturally, but they could be natural, yeah. You know? And I think that's good aesthetic work to me now is when I'm like, did you get your cheeks done? Mm-hmm. Where it's like, I kind of notice like enough to where they look really good, yeah. Or it's just really good naturally.
Yeah. To me, I think that's the key. I think what's we all agree upon is bad is when we can look at it and clearly tell they've had work. It's like you definitely have had your lips overdone or your cheeks overdone, or your cheeks are so large you can hardly open your eyes.
I think that's probably the most common and the easiest to identify, don't you?
Overdone lips are still, and we've been seeing a trend away for this for a few years now. People have across the board been wanting more natural results, but it still shocks me. There's a handful that want nothing natural. They want it to look overdone. They want people to know they've had them. Mm-hmm. And we have to constantly try to talk them down from getting or to get less.
I have conversation probably weekly with patients that come in for lip filler, a discussion about we really need to like dissolve because of whether migration or just years of filler on top of filler, you know, because it was a trend for a while to look slightly overdone. And it's kind of like someone taking their lash extensions off that like they just can't imagine being without them.
Yeah.
I just had a conversation right before I left and I said, the next time, instead of getting filler, we need to dissolve. And she's like, I don't mind a little migration. And in my mind, I was thinking, I do, because I don't want someone to ask you who did your lips. And you say, Jerry did it.
Yeah.
You know, I think patients are really afraid of that totally gone. We had someone that had years of filler, years in her lips, and we had to dissolve them. We literally was like, look, it's time. We need to just start from scratch. You don't need to keep like adding more and more in here. You definitely had some migration. And she was so upset when her lips were totally dissolved. And she's like, she didn't want to go out of her house. And she's like, couldn't wait for the time to come back and get them refill.
You know who you are.
You know who you are if you're listening to this.
You're listening. I know you're listening and you know who you are, and we love you.
What is your like go-to when you don't think it's appropriate to do filler? Not in a safe, not from a safety standpoint, but like if you're like, it's not going to look good or you're worried about like, you know, your name on that patient's lips, what is your go-to to talk them down?
I'll tell them my concerns. Like I'm, you know, one of the things about me is sometimes I'm like a little too blunt, but I'll actually say, I don't want my name. I don't want people to say that I did that. Because you know it's not gonna look good. But I think we all have an angle that we know we look better at. And so if you look at people that take a lot of selfies, they tend to be from the same angle. Or if we look at ourselves in our rear view mirror, we don't choose the angle that we look the worst in our rear view mirror. We look at the angle we look the best. You can hand Chris a mirror right now and the first thing, or you or me, and the first thing we're going to do is like slightly raise our chin and turn our head a little bit and purse our lips so that our jawline's tighter. And so I think that that's part of what people miss when they're looking at their lips and they don't see, because it's a very pretty 1D image or maybe a 2D image. But when you start looking from the side, and so a lot of times what I've done is taken a photo from the side and show the projection of the lips. And it's like, this is what we want to correct.
Yeah, not because they don't see that.
They don't see that.
Yeah.
I think when you help them to see what other people see, it does kind of help out.
Or I'll tell them sometimes too, like, it's going to throw off your proportions. Like, your facial balancing is going to be all messed up if we make your lips any bigger. And you don't have the rest of your facial structure to support that. And so I don't think it's a good idea. And usually I think whenever you say, that's what I would say to somebody that I'm like not super comfortable with, like somebody like
some of our patients that we see
super frequently, I'd be like, no, we're not doing it. Like, it's not going to look good. But I think sometimes just telling them it's going to throw their like balance off or their symmetries off or something like that, they think like, oh, like she knows what she's talking about. Like, I don't want to, you know, mess up the symmetry of the face or something like that. I think it's like a trigger word for people that it'll scare them away from it.
Yeah. There's a lot of talk now about facial balancing. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of patients will ask specifically about balancing. We've never heard that.
Mm-hmm.
I guess last year's probably when we first started hearing a patient request it. And so you probably, especially people that are on social media.
Yeah.
It probably is like, we can balance your lips. We're just going to have to make your forehead bigger.
And your nose and your cheeks and your chin.
So I think for me, the tool I use and probably is as helpful is using photos. Because I think there's something we get used to seeing our face so often in the mirrors that we kind of normalize that look. And so sometimes when people look overdone to everybody else around them, however they're positioning their head and holding it and looking in the mirror, they've normalized that.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes when we show them a photo or a profile view of themselves, then they can recognize, wow, that doesn't look quite normal. And then when we kind of show them what it'll look like when we take it away. So I think using photos in your assessment, in your consult, is really important to reflect back to them other than just a mirror.
Don't you agree that people see them, when someone sees themselves in a mirror, they see the ideal angle, the ideal image that they
do, but in the mirror also, we are looking at a mirror image. And so it's flipped, and in photos is really more like other people see us. And so I think there is something about the photos that a lot of us also find unsettling or unfamiliar, because we look in a mirror much more often than we look at a photo. So there's parts of that that I think is a little bit unnerving. But I think when it comes to symmetry, to overdone looks, somehow I believe it really is we've just normalized the way we appear in a mirror, or there's some feature that we don't like. And I believe is really skilled or talented injectors and that everywhere do this. People are going to them just as much for them to say no as they are to get a treatment done, because they're going to them because for some reason they have decided to put their trust in that person to give them an aesthetic, an ideal aesthetic. And so to just do what the patient asks without having a conversation, I think it's not only bad for your reputation, but it does that patient a disservice, right? It's like if they come in for some other medical treatment that's not indicated and I just don't want to tell them no. So I think it's incumbent upon us. I think it's our duty to say, like, look, this is a bit overdone at this point. And, you know, we talk about it a lot, and there's aesthetics and there's body modification. And so there's people who do things, they put like, you know, spikes in their forehead, they make scalloped lips, and they get piercings and sounds in their ear to stretch the earlobes out and all that. And that is an artistic expression. And certainly that's their right to kind of use their body as that medium. But I think in our practice, we focus on natural results. And unless we're doing some of those forms of body modification, if we do too much of that type of work, that's the reputation that we'll be known for. That's what'll be out in the community. And people are going to think that that's what we see as an ideal aesthetic. And I think none of us here see that as ideal. I also don't think any of us judge that. There's some people that that's their look and that's what they go for. It's just not what we do.
Yeah.
I think we're really good at, and I have this exact conversation with patients a lot of times because people are worried about being overdone, like a lot of our patients. But then I also have my patients that come in that may have like really heavy false eyelashes on, or have like a peacock feather on the end of their eyelash, or their brows are like real extreme. And those people can carry off a big, full fat lip. And that's what they want. That's what they like. It goes with the aesthetic that they have. And so I think it's real important for us to be able to kind of like read our patient, do an assessment. And that's where the consultation, like, I mean, have we ever taught a class, regardless of what it was, that we didn't talk about consultation? And so I think that's where it's important to spend time with the patient and know what they want and be sure that we're all on the same page before we start injecting. Because if we gave this lash technician I treat around the corner the same lips that you would give Rhonda, she'd go somewhere else. Rhonda's Allie's mom. That I would never do lip filler on because of the way Rhonda acts. But
me either. So I guess that's your problem if she ever decides to do it one day.
And Rhonda, if you're listening, they're implying or they're directly stating that you act like me. So neither one of them want to treat me either.
But I'm just saying you have to be able to read your patient. Yeah. I have a question that's really not related to that. It's kind of what we were just talking about because I'm curious about this. And I think I'm different. Do you think you look better in a photo or in a mirror?
Depends on the picture.
Yeah, it depends on the photo.
In the day, what I look like in the picture. I don't know. I was actually just looking.
That's what I would have guessed that you would have both said photo. And
I think I am told that I'm photogenic, which I kind of hate sometimes because I'm like, do you think I'm ugly in person?
I think you're both very photogenic.
Told that I'm photogenic.
Like, I think you're both very photogenic because I think you're very comfortable in front of a camera. I think I'm like much better in my eyes. I'm better in a mirror than I am on camera. And I know this is off track, but I started thinking about this when we were talking about showing patients mirrors earlier. And like yesterday, I wanted to throw up because we were doing like a procedure on me, and Chris did a video prior to, and I literally wanted to throw up. But when I saw the photo, because I thought, do I look that bad? But it's actually what everybody else sees. But when I look in the mirror, I'm like, I don't look that bad.
So we actually do have, I was just researching this, that we do have like a mirror bias. And most people will say they look better in the mirror than they do in photos. And it's just a familiarity that we have with ourselves and like reversal shock and things like that. Also, you can make like micro adjustments in the mirror to like, you know, make the face that you want to make your jawline look better or whatever. I was saying there's... one of my friends read this thing somewhere one time where she said that we're actually like 7 times uglier than we think we are. And I don't know where that came from because I like searched it on ChatGPT and I can't find anything about it. But one of my friends, like, she'll call me and be like, do you think I look ugly today? And she's like, I just always think about when Leah said like that we're actually 7 times uglier than we think we are. And I'm like, no, I think if anything, we actually think that we may look a little better than I don't know.
I don't know. I always think I don't look good. Like in general, I would. So yeah, if it's worse than what I think, it's pretty bad. Yeah. But that being said, I think I look better in photos usually. But it's interesting because I wonder if it depends on how much people like look in a mirror. I don't like to look in a mirror. So I will look in the mirror briefly when I'm getting ready, but it is really brief. I'm not one that's serious, but I do see lots and lots of photos and videos of me from all the different places. So I would think that I look at images of myself more than I see in photos.
So that's what you're more familiar with.
And so maybe that's what I'm more familiar with. So it's an interesting concept of what you're more familiar with looking at, because I'm not one that's going to spend, I mean, I think females spend more time putting on makeup in front of a mirror, blow drying their hair, all that sort of stuff. pretty much, I think guys in general, but especially if it's similar to me and you, we get out quickly, blow dry our hair, but even I don't even blow dry my hair in the mirror. Most of it's like by feel and like, okay, I know kind of what, when it feels, and I'll do one little last look as I'm walking out and I'm like, oh yeah, let me brush that. But it's not a lot of time, whereas I see lots of photos and ads and always when I'm at events. And I also wonder how that'll change.
New York Times Square billboards.
But I wonder how it'll change with people doing so many selfies. Like how that bias will change over years, because that's a, you know, when we think about it, that's a relatively new, like last decade or so. It's not something that, we've done. So I wonder over time if we're going to get to where we realize the way we look in photos, we prefer that. But you, I mean, you said you like photos better.
I'm really like, I look in the mirror when I have to in the morning to put on makeup or sunscreen or, you know, whatever I put on in the morning. But really, other than that, I actually had this thought pop into my head this weekend. Funny enough, I was at my house, had like gotten up, brushed my teeth, made breakfast, read, did doing around the house and things. And I don't think I'd like even brushed my hair that day though. And I remember thinking, I don't even know what I look like right now. Like I have not even glanced in the mirror, even though I've been in the bathroom in and out doing laundry, doing things. I hadn't even glanced in the mirror, and I went into the mirror and my hair was like all kinds of crazy. I was like, I've just been living my whole day like this today. But it's funny, like I don't think I look in the mirror unless I'm putting something on my face. Yeah.
I don't look in the mirror to, I don't love the way I look in the mirror. I'd said all that to say, I think I look better in a mirror than I do in pictures because I'm horrible in photos.
I feel like you look in the mirror.
Like, I don't look in the mirror when I fix my hair in the mornings and things like that. But you know what I look in the mirror to do? Brush my teeth. And that's something I could do without a mirror. But I watch myself brush my teeth, but I don't watch myself do my hair. That's kind of backwards.
I feel like when you're walking around the clinic, I will see you stop at a mirror sometimes.
Yeah, he stops in a mirror a lot.
Yeah.
I'm checking my teeth.
Yeah, no, you look in a mirror a lot.
Like to fix your hair or... For whatever it is, I just feel like I do see you stop at mirrors, like make a pit stop when you pass one.
And he loves mirrors. He buys mirrors all the time.
I love a mirror. Not necessarily to look at myself, but maybe that's why I buy them mirrors. Maybe I like the way I look. Huh. Oh, well. That's another episode.
We need to get a psychologist on for that episode. So we were talking about in the episode, the whole discussion is good work, bad work. How do we detect it? What's, you know, good versus bad? And so I think it's, you know, bad is clearly something that, you know, looks botched in some way. And so when we get into like natural versus body modification, we can debate good and bad because somebody can do beautiful body art, body modification and change things. It's not really aesthetics and it still can be what we consider a good result, just not a natural result. Mm-hmm. I think what we can all agree on when we get into unsafe things and we see some of these horrible results, and people text us complications all the time. I know Allie, there was somebody that just contacted us or saw us recently that had a bad experience at another provider online and posted about it. And when we saw the photos, we were just horrified. So this goes beyond something that's just a non-natural looking result, but a safe treatment. This is where they went and done a high-risk treatment in an area that many places may not choose. And they had a complication that the patient didn't even realize was a potential problem. They had a vascular occlusion. They had necrosis in an area of kind of in the upper nose and forehead where they had tried to put filler in some of those 11 lines or the angry lines that people, we typically treat with a neurotoxin, but there's some other things we can do there. This provider chose to put filler there from what we can tell from what the patient reported and what's available publicly on Yelp. And then the photos are clearly an adverse outcome. We'll put those up on the YouTube channel. You guys can review and decide on yourself what you think about these photos. But when you look at it and you realize that some of these procedures, it goes way more than just having a bad aesthetic outcome or something that's not natural looking. It actually can be really dangerous. And so this person, at least from what we know and what they talked to us about, had necrosis and some sloughing of the tissue. Fortunately, they didn't have any visual changes, but I think patients need to be aware that you can have, you know, blindness is a complication. Strokes are a complication. And so these are all things that, you know, experienced providers are usually trained on. They know how to monitor for that to occur and they know how to try to intervene in the emergency steps to intervene should one of those things occur. So I think that's really important for the patients to know, is to ask your providers about their training, their experience,
their license, their made up certifications.
Yeah, because this provider actually had a certification.
A certification, yes. Well, a supposed certification. It was, the title was a medical aesthetic practitioner certified.
Mm-hmm. Which, you know, again, maybe this was in another state. This is not something we have available in the state of Florida. And at the time this was done, it was in the state of Florida. So this is not a license that we actually have available for a licensed provider to inject in Florida. And that was the title that this individual used and was injecting under. So we don't know any of the details about medical direction or where the product came from. This could have been something from another country or illegally obtained or not. So we don't have those details, but definitely that title is not something that's available as a license in Florida for a provider to inject independently. So double check, do your due diligence as a patient, research your providers and where they're getting their training, their education, their products. Never feel afraid to ask those questions. I think that's the other thing. Sometimes patients are afraid to ask because they think it may offend the provider. If you ask the question and the provider gets upset with providing the answer or feels like you're challenging them,
that's a red flag.
Get up and leave.
Yeah.
Get up and leave. If you ask any of us any of those questions, we will happily show you our certificates, talk to you about our experience.
I do think it's hard because of the way that she had it listed, even under her business on Yelp. Like, if I'm somebody who's never gotten Botox in my life, and I go and I look and I have a friend of a friend who went to this person, and I look that up, I'm like, oh, that's a license. She's certified. You know, so I think even furthermore, because you can ask them that and they can tell you a list of made up titles or certificates that they have. But I think whenever I was talking to this patient and I told her, you know, there's a risk of blindness there, necrosis, all of these things, when she was talking about how this provider opted to do filler in this area versus neurotoxin, which we typically do, she was jaw on the floor that those are possibilities that could happen. So I think if you're not educated prior to a new procedure with a provider of the risks that could happen, I think that's a red flag. Like, if you're not aware of the possible ways that things can go wrong, like, I talk to my patients about, here's worst case scenario, you know, what could happen, so that you're educated on it.
But I think the problem with that, and this is always, you know, unfortunately, the kind of catch 22, this provider may have educated the patient on the what they saw as the adverse outcomes. So you said jaw on the floor when you talked about blindness, stroke, and et cetera.
Right.
But the patient may have assumed she was educated when they just talked about swelling, bruising, bleeding. Yeah. And they may have thought that's the extent of it. And so often, and when you look at lawsuits and aesthetics and you look at some adverse outcomes, it revolves around informed consent. And so when things go wrong, then we look at everything that could have went wrong. But in the moment, the provider may provide some superficial, brief overview of easy complications to handle, and they're trying to minimize those complications, so the patients will say yes to the procedure. Or they're not trying to, even for a money purpose. We always go down there trying to make money. But in reality, some of them just don't want to scare the patients. And so they're trying to make the patient comfortable. So they tell them the most likely things that'll happen, and they leave away these big complications until one of those things occur. And so, you know, how does a patient know that they've been informed of all the risk? Right?
Yeah,
because they, if they're sitting there listening and they assume, like, I asked the complication and they told me bruising, bleeding,
swelling.
So they have done their due diligence, looked at the certifications, asked the questions, and they may think that's it. So I think do a little bit of research into it, see if it matches up with what it said. And then, you know, again, personal references, all those things are important. None of it guarantees that you're not going to have an adverse outcome, but certainly ask the question. And if there's hesitancy on the provider to answer the question, then you need to get up and leave.
I think a lot of people don't know what to ask, though, because, I mean, you think when you're going to a doctor, like, now, hindsight, I would, but, like, I would never question my doctor. If they wrote me a, you know, a doxycycline for a fungal infection or whatever, I just assume the doctor knows exactly the what's best for me. And so, and I think that a lot of people are the same with aesthetics. They just assume that, you know, we all practice the same and it's going to do what's the safest and their best interest. So we talk about it all the time. Vet your provider. Feel free to ask questions. Ask how many treatments like this they've done, if there are other options that are better, safer, with better outcomes.
But one of the other things, you guys know, I'm big into AI use. I'm a proponent of it. And patients now have a lot of ability to research it. It drives us crazy. It drove me crazy in the ICU when patients would come in with like Dr. Google. They've Googled and they think they know more than the doctor. Now they come in with Dr. ChatGPT where they've asked the questions, but it actually is a good resource. And so if you don't know, go in there before you go to your provider, ask it and see if it matches up. And if they don't address one of the big issues. So just in this example, I typed in, what is filler complications for the 11 lines? And it tells me filler in the 11 lines is considered one of the highest risk areas on the face because of key arteries, especially the ophthalmic artery. Major complications are vascular occlusion, skin ischemia, necrosis and pain, vision loss, blindness, stroke, compression of vessels, infection, Tyndall effect, and it goes down the list. So literally the first two things that it puts before it lists all those are vascular occlusion and blindness, and it tells you this is the highest risk area. So if you go to a provider and you ask them and they don't even glance over that, or if you say, hey, I read about some blindness and they can't tell you what they're going to do to help mitigate that, then again, that's a sign. So we do have easy access now. There is a free version that we can all have access to of AI. You can use your Google resources, but do a little bit of research as a patient, especially if you're going in for something that may be considered a little bit higher risk or something different than what most people are getting for treatment in a particular area. Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you guys so much for tuning in for another episode of Beauty and the Brain. We look forward to seeing you next week.
See you soon.
Bye.